Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for almost 43 years. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we gather together and hopefully teach each other stuff, learn from each other, and are somewhat entertained, hopefully, by each other. And I hope that a lot of people join me tonight, as they have on many Sunday nights, and will be participating along with it, because it's people's individual participation that makes or breaks these nets. This isn't a broadcast show. We don't do a routine or a monologue or anything. So we require your participation. So with that in mind, let me remind you of the usual links. I'll drop for a second and come back. Okay, if you want to reach me and you can't do it on the radio, then email is as good as any. This would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions. Those were questions that people would email because they wouldn't be able to be near a radio to transmit. They might be able to receive, or they would listen to the internet stream of the technical net, or they would listen to an archived file of the audio net to get the answer. So those were called mailbag questions. Also, if you have any topics for discussion, sometimes people, things happen in the news that people know about and they would like to share their expertise, and so they would like to do a short presentation on a topic. If they contact me, usually I'm agreeable to it. Sometimes they just want to be part of a discussion. They don't want to be the central focus. And other times they really don't know much about the subject, but they're curious about it, and so they want to sit back and listen to other people who have more experience talk about it. So that would be a reason. Also, if you have a puzzle to share, we're always looking for technical puzzles. I've tweezed and teased a puzzle question out of ChatGPT, the infamous artificial intelligence algorithm that's well known to many people and making the news still this week. And hopefully I'll have an opportunity to share with you tonight this thing. So if you have a puzzle, or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder because you heard or read news or NASA space-related story and you would like his take on it, you can either contact him directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com, or all the other reasons, you can contact me. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. In addition, I offer a link page with interesting articles and YouTube that I've collected over the last week. I put it on a page and keep it there. So at your leisure, you can go to my link page and click on it and take a look at what I have to offer there. It's going to be available forever and ever and ever. You just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and it'll land you on that page. We have a chat room. Usually, lately, it's been kind of quiet, but sometimes it erupts into a lot of interesting activity. You can get to our chat room by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to the chat room. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be right back. Okay. As I mentioned before, we offer a streaming service. If you or someone you know can't quite hear the repeaters, we put it on the internet so that anyone with internet service can listen in to Glen Oaks repeater. You just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring up the audio stream. I used to initially just enable it for the technical net, but some people asked me if I could to keep it running the rest of the week, and so I try to as best I can. Occasionally, the computer has other ideas, but for the most part, if you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, you can get the audio stream of whatever is going on in Glen Oaks for the whole week. And also, I like to remind people always of Mike, KC2NJI. He has a website called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of this technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. A lot of very, very, very clever amateur radio operators who've been here and gone. They've either moved away or they've unfortunately become silent keys over the years, but Their voice and their teaching remains a real thing in the archives of Mike's site, AmateurRadio.tv. So please check it out when you have a chance. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be back with the rest of the show. Okay, before we get to the usual stuff, which is taking questions, hopefully amateur radio related for the first few questions, because this is an amateur radio technical net, but we'll discuss science, technology, whatever people are interested in as the night progresses. And I hope people have some interesting topics, questions, or comments, or what have you. And then at 10:15, of course, will be the SpaceNet Report with Paul WS2S. But before we get to all of that, I picked up this strange little hobby. I've grown very curious of artificial intelligence, as I've shared with you repeatedly on these Sunday nights. I've investigated ChatGPT, which is a conversationally trained artificial intelligence. I've played around with graphic creating artificial intelligence, and on my link page demonstrated that it has a really poor understanding of amateur radio technology when asked to draw something that involves a Yagi or a center-fed dipole. It has no idea what those things are, apparently. And I've even played around with speech synthesizing artificial intelligence, where you feed it a person's voice for a few minutes, and it does a decent simulation of their voice in text-to-voice. So, recently I have gained access to Bing's new chat. Bing is a search engine from Microsoft, and they've invested $1 billion in OpenAI's ChatGPT technology, and they have their own little chatbot. It made the news recently, bad news, because people were able to game the system and get the artificial intelligence to go on little rants, which undermined the belief that this was a great thing. It seemed rather flawed. So unfortunately, they've taken the poor Bing chat in the back room and given it a lobotomy. I had a conversation with Bing chat, and it's no fun at all. If you kind of go along with it, if you ask it anything that's mildly subversive, it will just refuse to respond and shut itself down. So right now, Microsoft, unfortunately, has given the poor artificial intelligence a lobotomy. Hopefully, it will be reversible at some point. But I will let you know how things go on the artificial intelligence topic. If anyone has any particular questions or comments, feel free.
KD2AMZ, Mike, I have a follow-up by power supply project from a few weeks ago. But I got to go because I got to go to bed early. I got to go to work early tomorrow.
Yeah, no problem. I'm putting it on the top of the list. I'll just ask for people to submit their names, and then we'll get right to you. Is that okay?
Totally fine. I think people are going to like this. It's a good little project for someone.
Okay, very good, Mike. Shouldn't take us more than a few minutes. If anyone else wants to put their name down on the list for any questions or comments or statements or what have you, please feel free. Just hit that push-to-talk button and give me your name and your call sign. Rich recognized. Rich, you're about 80% noise, unfortunately, so I don't know what to tell you. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list before we start the show?
John.
I didn't catch that entirely. All I caught was John.
NQ, 1U, November, Quebec, 1 uniform, John.
Okay, NQ, 1U, I have you down. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? I mean, it'll be open later on, but if the first come, first serve type of thing, so... If you have a question or a comment for tonight and you want to get your name down, please tell me now.
Kilo Zero Bravo Bravo.
What's your first name, sir?
Name is Ryan, Romeo Yankee Alpha November.
Okay, very good, Ryan. So we have four people. That should be enough for the time being. So, Mike, please tell us about your experiment. You came on recently, and you were curious about the new PD protocols of USB 3 power supplies and whether it could be implemented in some way for QRZ operations. So how'd things go?
It went quite well, Roy. I got the parts yesterday, and we tested it out at W2OSR Bob's house on a Yaesu 817 in another QRP rig he had. Looked more at home brew, but it worked perfectly. Basically, I'm using from Amazon. It's called a LILYRN Lirin Type C QC PD 2.0 PD 3.0 charge trigger detector, and I also used a power bank. It's a 130 watt power bank. I can give you the model numbers of it, but it's a PD power bank. And when we put it together, it's still in prototype form, sitting on my desk, you know, loose. It was able to easily power the 817 Yaesu without any issue whatsoever. Maybe over a couple of days, I'll try my KX3 and run it to a full 15 watts on it. I don't anticipate any problems, and it's remarkably cheap. The chip only costs $6.06. You can also apply a 5% coupon. But it works. And if anybody has questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Yeah, very good. Have you considered writing it up for the e-log? That would be a fascinating article.
It could be if I had time to breathe. As you all know, I'm very, very busy as an engineer at the VA. As soon as I hang up here of the TechNet, I'm going to go straight to bed and get ready to go to bed. But yeah, I mean, we could write it up. But again, it's really quite simple. I'm surprised how simple it is. And if you go to, like I said, you go to Amazon, and it's called a Type C QC PD 2.0, PD 3.0 to DC spoof charge trigger detector. That's a mouthful. But it's right on Amazon. I chose the type to use with dip switches rather than you push a little button in programming mode, because I want it to go instantly into the voltages I selected. And with the power bank, and I have a 20,000 amp hour power bank, which is supposedly rated at 130 watts PD, which is, you know, quite small, actually, but it works amazingly well. Bob and I were so very surprised yesterday when we actually tried it out.
Okay, very good. If you can, I realize you're kind of limited in your time. If you could send me the link either in the chat room or in my email, I'll post it on my link so that other people can take a look at the Amazon entry.
Roy, I don't have your email link. You want to send it to my email link, and I'll reply back when I get home from work tomorrow?
Yeah, sure, we can do that.
M-I-K-E, 122257, Mike122257@AOL.com. Send me, and I'll attach the papers or whatever, the parts I got from Amazon. Please send me an email, and I'll be happy to reply.
Okay, very good. I mean, all you have to do is send it to the domain ac2gs.com. It's my call sign, and I'll get it.
I know you have a pencil here. I just jumped out of the shower. You have to forgive me. I literally have nothing here, which is why I ask you to please send it to my email. I don't even have a pencil here right now. My apologies.
No, it's no problem, Mike. I'll send you the email. No problem. I just thought it would be easier on both of us, but I understand. Anyone with any questions for Mike today about this? I'm curious about it. Again, we kind of gave you a caveat emptor last week in that as long as you you use power supplies that utilize the latest, greatest PD technology for USB 3+, you're good. But unfortunately, there are so many different layers to PD. If you have an older power supply that uses USB-C, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has the full range of a power device implementation. So as Mike kind of did, he just kind of got it off Amazon new with the specs available to him. But unfortunately, once you buy these things, they don't really put all the specs on the device. So, you know, once you put it in one of your drawers, when you pull it out in a month or two, you might forget exactly which PD protocol to take. But if anyone has any questions for Mike about this, please feel free. Oh, well, I guess there's nothing for tonight, maybe for some other night. And when I get the information from Mike, I will post it either on this week's link or next week's link page. Again, you can get to the link page by just typing roy.ac2gs.com. All you really have to remember is my first name and my call sign. I've said it a few million times already. So thank you, Mike. I wish you good luck with it, and I hope to hear nothing but good news about it in the future.
Why, thank you, Roy. Yeah, it'd be wonderful to do an article in our newsletter or whatever. Yes, you have to be careful what you buy. You have to make sure you have the right cables. Not all USB cables are the same. Not all USB wall warts or power supplies are the same. But that's part of the fun.
Okay, it's probably healthy to consider it a challenge. Otherwise, you probably would pull hair out of your head. Because I told the story last week. I won't repeat myself. But you can plug a seemingly similar USB-C power plug from just 1 or 2 years ago and into a new PD protocol device and get absolutely nothing out of it. So it can be infuriating at times, like most computers tend to be. As the old adage, business rephrase, computers, you can't live with them, you can't live without them.
Roy, I can tell you, if you use what I bought on Amazon, I happen to have a 3.0 USB-C, but if you use the parts that I specify, I'll send it to you, you should have absolutely no trouble whatsoever. It does work.
Yeah, I understand and I agree with you, Mike. If you already have access to the particular specs and they're the latest and greatest, it's not as much of a problem as most of us hams tend to collecting. At last count, I think I have 100 power plugs. Those wall warts that came with everything that I bought after they died. I threw away the devices. Some of the old timers would keep them and remove all the little components, but I tended to throw them away, but I saved the wall warts. So I got more than 100 wall warts. So in that type of environment, it's unfortunately not easy to just pull out a wall wart, see that it has an output of a USB-C connector, and say, aha, this is going to work. They're not all equal. But yeah, I agree with you. If you buy it precisely for this little experiment, you pretty much make it error-free.
That's it, Roy, pretty much. So I'm going to turn it back over to Ned. I want to thank everyone again, and it's bedtime. When I get home tonight, I'll look for your email, and I'll attach the, what I purchased on Amazon, and you can post on the website, I guess.
Yes, I will do that, Mike. Pleasant dreams, and we'll talk again down the line.
KD2AMZ, clear.
Okay, very good. Now, Rich, again, I would love to hear from you. I'm just telling you up front, you're about 80% noise, unfortunately. So I'm not quite sure. I also see that you're on Echolink, so maybe you want to go through Echolink, which is probably a good idea for today, rather than the 80% noise in your background. So Rich, what's your question or your comment for tonight?
Hi, Roy. Yeah, I spoke to Steve about the Sheldon repeater this week. He said he would check it out. I don't know if he got around to it. But I'm full quieting into four other repeaters, one of which is in Sheldon. So I guarantee you that it's not a problem on this end. I may be on the fringes of Sheldon, but as you know, usually I'm in there with about 30% noise on my signal. That's all changed in the last 3 to 4 weeks, and now it's 80% noise on my signal. So nothing changed here. And like I said, I could get into four other repeaters full quieting. So I hope somebody on the repeater committee hears this and can do whatever they can do or comment on it. I don't know why it's not receiving my signal like it used to. But anyway, I was going to ask a question about, which I still want to, about what Dick used to say, his mantra. He used to say, resonate, then radiate. But before I do that, I just put on to my nano VNA one of my antennas, the NFED half wave, which works great. I was on 20 meters and 40 meters all afternoon with it. But now I wanted to check the SWR, and the SWR is bouncing all over the place. It doesn't settle down. What would be the reason for that, Roy? Go ahead.
I am not quite sure what you mean by bouncing. Is it bouncing in time or is it bouncing in spectrum? In other words, are the sweeps changing over time, or are the sweeps erratically going up and down and up and down on the same sweep? So are we talking time-wise or something else?
No, the sweeps are going up and bouncing up and down. One sweep bouncing up and down.
Okay, well, that's very, very strange. Maybe there's a problem with a connection. Maybe it needs to be recalibrated. I don't recall exactly what it looked like theoretically, a classical resonant sweep from a VNA with, you know, nearby the resonant frequency is, it starts with a high viswa, and then it goes down to something close to 1-to-1, and then it turns around and goes back up again. It shouldn't really be erratic up or down, up and down, up and down, unless there's something wrong with the machine or there's something wrong with the transmission line or the connection to the antenna or the condition of the antenna. So it's kind of difficult for me just to kind of give you an exact reason why. If anyone else has some great ideas why a somewhat resonant antenna suddenly appears to be all over the place, feel free to join in.
K0PB.
Yes, Ryan.
Yeah, I also have a VNA, and I've noticed that sometimes with a common mode current or bad connections, it'll bounce around the trace and everything. So maybe it with an NFED, maybe it's common mode, or maybe it is some kind of bad connection.
Okay, yeah, that's as good as any. The question is, why did it have a good connection and not common mode before? And you know, what's changed since then, as the old saying goes. But yeah, common mode can get into your VNA. Although, at this output signal that a VNA produces, because it's all purely from the VNA injecting the frequency, I don't know if it would obscure it quite that much. But it sounds like some connection problem. If not, then it's some problem with the VNA. You might want to pull out, I know you don't particularly care, I assume you're using the nano VNA. Have you considered pulling out your rig expert's VNA just to kind of double check on it, because it's misbehaved before.
I haven't checked it with the rig expert because I just connected the nano VNA to the transmission line, so I didn't have time, but that's the next thing to do, to check it against that. I doubt very much whether it's calibration, but we'll see. And the actual line, not just, imagine a smooth, sweep line. This is, the line itself is bouncing a little up and down. It's oscillating, in other words. I don't know. I put five clamp-on toroids on the line right by the PLT-59, and I wonder if they could be interfering somehow with it. But I will put this on the rig expert and see if the same thing happens. If, you know, I'm looking at, like, the length figure and the loss figure, and they keep on changing, too. So something's changing. I checked the fittings and all that. And like I said, I was on this antenna all afternoon on two bands, and if I could hear them, I could work them. So it's been a great antenna for me. I just don't understand. And I could also check it with other antennas, too. With two other antennas, but this has been an amazing antenna for me. I just don't understand why the SWR sweep is bouncing up and down. So as to make it, you know, totally unreliable. Okay, so that's my first question. The other one, you know, Dick's mantra, as I said, was first resonate then radiate. But I'm about to try to turn a 20-meter inverted P into an 80-meter inverted P by putting some more wire on it, but also adding a coil to each leg of the inverted P. So I could see where I could bring that into resonance, but radiating is a whole other thing. I could be, you know, warming the clouds, or, you know, having an NVIS that's just about unusable. So what did he mean by resonate then radiate, Roy? Go ahead.
I believe his underlying principle is the most important thing to a functioning antenna is to modify it in such a way that as the radiating element, it is resonant to the frequency that you're trying to emit. The entire principle, and he would go into detail. You know, most of the antennas that we use are called standing waves. We went into the variation that aren't standing waves called traveling waves, which have different characteristics. But standing waves require things to be resonant so that they will oscillate without losing too much energy back and forth, and they will travel back and forth from their ends to their feed points, you know, tens of hundreds of times, each time radiating a portion of their energy into the electromagnetic spectrum. So it was his principle under that understanding that the most important thing that you do is that you make sure that the antenna is resonant to the frequencies so that standing waves can be created, and with standing waves, you efficiently radiate your RF current into electromagnetic waves. Now, the point of first you resonate, then you radiate, with a near vertical incident sky wave, you are radiating. You know, there's nothing odd about that. It's just how you're radiating it and where you're radiating it to. You could. There are more functional directions to point the radiation emitted by an antenna. Most of us are more interested in distant communication, so we like to have a takeoff angle that gets it into the horizon and into the ionosphere and refracted back down and maybe up and down and bouncing around and going around the world. If you're interested, if you're in the military, if you're trying to communicate with someone nearby and there are hills in the area, then you're more interested in a near vertical incident skyway, where your communications are much, much more localized. So both radiate, and even if you don't properly shield your vertical that's based on the ground with enough radials, it's radiating, but unfortunately a lot of it is radiating into the ground and warming up the little earthworms. So all those cases you're radiating, but the point is to effectively radiate at a takeoff angle that benefits what you're planning to do with your communications. If it's nearby, let me drop for a sec. If you're nearby to the person you want to contact, then it's near vertical incident skywave. If you are distant, then it's the regular skywave with a takeoff angle more to the horizon than just up in front, you know, right above you.
My point is that you can resonate, you know, an antenna, but radiate it, like you said, you could be warming up the earthworms. So just because it's resonant doesn't mean that you're going to radiate efficiently, correct?
Yeah, but you have to kind of do things in a particular order. The most important to Dick and to me and to many other people is that you have a proper resonant radiating antenna to begin with. Then you have to worry about what the takeoff angle and what the coupling is for that antenna. If it's a vertical, ground-mounted vertical, you want enough radials to shield you from ground coupling so that you don't heat up the earthworms too much with your linear amplifier. If you are interested in DX, you want to have, say, a vertical, if you have a horizontal, you don't want the horizontal relatively close to the ground, which would produce a near vertical incident skywave just above you and warm up the clouds instead of the ground. So, you know, that's why some people like 5/8 wave verticals. They like the takeoff angle of that particular design. You know, different antennas have different takeoff angles, and you have to keep those all in mind. But if you get the takeoff angle right, but you don't get the resonance right, you're still not doing anything useful. So I could understand the attitude of, you know, first get it to be resonant, then worry about the takeoff angle. Yeah. Getting back to the previous question, though, you mentioned that you have a large number of ferrites connected to this at the source of your VNA. Did you have that many ferrites when you were operating, or did you put the ferrites on between operating earlier today and testing out your nano VNA?
No, the ferrites have been on all through for about 2 weeks now. And I've been using the antenna exclusively because it works just as well as my inverted V's do on, and this is with just the internal antenna tuner in the rig, on 20 and 40. So there's no reason anymore for me to keep that 20-meter inverted V because I'm just as loud to stations whether I'm on the NFED half wave or the inverted V. And it even resonates on 20 meters. I need my external antenna tuner on 10 meters, I mean, except I'm having a problem of RF on 10 meters and only 10 meters with my Kenwood 440.
Okay, very good. I have a response from John KD2BD, a very clever man who gives a lot of good advice. He's not able to get into the repeater, so he listens to the transmission and he checks into the chat room. So he has a little interesting entry. He says it sounds to him like the erratic VNA sweeps are a sign of a loose antenna connection. He posits that when the antenna is used for transmitting, the loose connection gets temporarily heated and welded by the high current flow. So the transmitter doesn't see the effects of the loose connection, which he suggests is just a guess on his part. But that's an interesting surmise. If you have a slightly loose connection and you put, 50, 60, 70 watts through it, it might be enough to locally warm everything, which and a bit, which might be enough to obscure the erratic nature. With your nano VNA, you're putting out microwatts, so that's not going to heat anything, so you wouldn't get that effect. So that's a good idea from John.
Yes, I will. Like I said, I'll try this on my two other inverted Vs and see if it jumps around. If not, I'll know it's something with this antenna. And like you said, the power going into it may overwhelm whatever's going on with it. But everything's jumping around. The numbers that the nano VNA are reporting back are constantly changing. And so we'll see. By the way, on Echolink, I hear the noise. I'm on the Selden repeater, the VL, W2VL repeater. I think that's Selden. But anyway, I hear the noise on it. I'm going to switch to another Limewatt repeater on Echolink to see if the noise goes away. So the fact that I could hear noise on whatever repeater I'm coming through and it's on Echolink has nothing to do with anything here. So there's definitely a lot of noise on the signal, so I'm going to switch to the other repeater. All right, Roy, thanks. I'll be playing around with different things. If anybody has an idea why I'm only getting RF on 28 megacycles in the shack, I'd like to know that, too. All right, Roy, back to net.
Okay, very good, Rich. I caution you when you're linking to another Echolink. As far as I'm aware, this is the only Echolink that's part of this connection. I think if there's another Echolink which might be designated W2KPQ, I don't know, it might end up being the UHF station, which isn't linked to us. So I think if you try any other Echolink node, it's not going to be linked to the technical mess.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. It's PQ, PKQ or something like that?
Yeah, that's it's a kind of a reused call sign, but I think that's also the call sign for the UAP repeater, Flymark.
You even dropped out just a second ago, Roy. But, okay, I won't go to the other repeater then. I'll just stick with this W2VL. But, I'd be satisfied to know that they looked at the repeater, the Selden repeater, and that it's working optimally. I'll be satisfied knowing that for some reason, maybe they built a building in the last month between me and Selden, but I get into another repeater in Selden, full quieting on 2 meters. That's why this is very bothersome to me. And yes, other people can get into Selden better than I can, but the norm has been 30% noise. As you know, Roy, now it's 80% noise, and nothing in my shack has changed. All right. Back to net. Thanks, Roy.
You're welcome, Rich. I think it was suggested last week, but, unfortunately, most of the powers that be of Limark don't tend to frequent our technical net, so you might want to bring it up tomorrow night for the club's info net. You know, there you might be able to tell the president of the club, and I'm sure he's heard of this by now, but, if you want to, use belt suspenders simultaneously. You might want to mention it tomorrow night as well.
I think I'll do that. I'll have to come in on Echolink to do it, but I think I'll do that. Thanks, Rich.
Okay, very good, Rich. And I guess you have no further thoughts about Dick's concepts about first resonate, then radiate. You know, takeoff angle, there's a lot of very important aspects to antenna design that unfortunately is beyond, for the most part, the control of individuals to even measure. We've gone through that before as well. What's very important for antenna design is efficiency. How efficient an antenna is a significant thing. You can make it resonant. You can make it radiate in the right direction at the right takeoff angle. But if it's something like a short whip is heavily loaded at the base for 160 meters, you're going to have a machine. You're going to have a radiator that maybe on the best of days will be 1% efficient, which is not very good. So efficiency is very important, but efficiency is probably the least measurable aspect of antennas. You can discern it to a degree, but it's very difficult other than actually measuring it in an anechoic chamber, the field strengths, and then summing them all up and calculating things. Very expensive, so it's pretty much never done. But efficiency is kind of as important as anything else, but is always left on the cutting room floor. So thanks, Rich. If you got any other comments, feel free. Otherwise, we'll move on. Yes, Wesley?
Next on the roll, radio related.
Okay, I will put you on the list. We have two people left before you. And I got your email, but I got your email at 8:27. And one of these days I'll learn to do five things at once, but I don't think I'll be able to learn to do it tonight. So there's probably not going to be much opportunity for me to read what you just sent me. 20 minutes ago. But you consider yourself on the list.
Thank you.
Okay, John, what's your question or your comment for tonight?
If your antenna is resonant, let's say with a 1.5 to 1, that means what? That means that the power, let's say 100 watts, that you're putting into the antenna, most of it is going into the antenna, but that has nothing to do with what the antenna does with it after that. Do I have it straight?
Okay. Well, the SWR has a lot of different meanings, like the Q of a circuit has a lot of different meanings, and one of it is the percentage of signal that's reflected back. So the closer you get to an SWR of 1 to 1, the greater the percentage of power is transferred into your antenna. And then, as you mentioned, you have to deal with other aspects of how efficient is that antenna at radiating, how much of it is going to be dissipated in electromagnetic waves, which is what you want, and how much is going to be used up in waste heat, which you don't want. So something like a traveling wave. Traveling wave antennas don't really have standing waves. They don't benefit from the reflection of the wave going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So standing waves tend to be more efficient. Traveling waves have a loading resistor at their end. They'll radiate for the length of the antenna, and then when it reaches the end, rather than reflect back, it'll just be dissipated as local heat energy. So you could have something with a wonderful SWR that's a traveling wave antenna, but it'll end up radiating much less because it takes that energy and 50% of it gets used up to just heat up the resistor at the end of it.
Okay, I think I got it now. I, by the way, I attached my my 20-meter inverted V to the nano VNA, and same thing is happening. The numbers are constantly changing. So it's not that antenna. It's something else that's going on. Could it possibly be calibration? I would doubt it.
I guess it really depends on how terribly off calibration that unit can possibly get. I would think not. Maybe there's a loose connection in the connector itself. You know, maybe there's a mechanical problem, but, you know, I would be willing to bet under the circumstances that you're mentioning that if you tried to rig expert again, like the last time, it would all go away. You know, at the very least, I would consider recalibrating it and then testing it. You know, run a scan with your 50-ohm load connector and see if you get a straight line. If you don't get a straight line, then you know you got some serious problems inside that nano VNA.
Yeah, as I told you once, this is a nano VNA that's not shielded on the inside in any way. So I read on the internet, well, where that isn't so great. But this is the first time I've ever seen an SWR bounce around like this. So I will continue. I will. I'll report back. So the other guys are waiting. Thanks, Roy. WTBZ clear.
Okay, very good, Rich. I wish you luck, and I look forward to hearing good news in the future. So next on my list is John, MQ1U. What's your question or your comment for tonight, John?
Hi, MQ1U here, John. I'm actually kind of following up on what's been said. I'm thinking about putting up an infrared antenna. Let's assume it's coupled properly and resonant. The question is that I'm wrestling with, and I know this is not going to have specific answers, but kind of maybe ballpark answers. I know I don't want to double it back on itself, but I have to be able to make a lot of turns because of the where I have to put it. So what's a reasonable number of twists and turns and bends that one can put in an antenna before one just wastes the time and have the energy shoot back on itself?
Well, I would say probably in the long run it's more important how sharp the turns are than how many turns they are. If you could do it in softer turns, more soft turns, one or two really hard, sharp turns, I would tend to go with the soft. And I don't think there's a kind of 0-1 binary going on, unless you get ridiculous and just have it turn into a spiral of some kind. You try as best you can. Again, try not to make terribly sharp turns into it, and hope for the best. If you don't like it and you have the opportunity to change the shape a little bit, go for it, because, you know, I mean, there's no good way of even simulating it. Antenna simulations for these things are probably not going to be at all accurate, because it's very difficult to model the external world. Most antenna simulation doesn't really have the ability to handle objects that are nearby that could capacitively couple and do all kinds of wonky reflections and such. So, you know, my attitude, and I'll open it for other people to give their opinion, but as long as you don't make really sharp return turns on it, you know, the number of kinks in it isn't going to impact it terribly. But if anyone has any better suggestions, feel free.
Yeah, this is WTBZ. I did a lot of research into NFED halfways, and everybody out there says that just exactly what Roy said. You can wind it any way you want to, as long as, you know, they're not really close turns, and the wire isn't like an inch away or the coax is an inch away from another part of the coax. You could put it in any configuration you want. That's what the wisdom out there on NFED half waves is. Back to Matt.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of by predilection, it's a compromise antenna. If you have an antenna farm out there and, you know, lots of acres and the ability to put it at any height and, you know, anything, you don't usually end up with an NFED. So it's not unusual for people to put kinks in them. And there are still relatively good reports with non-straight NFEDs. I'm curious, John, are you going to go for a resonant half-wave NFED or a non-resonant NFED?
What I'd like to do is to try to get it on a few bands, so then I have to use foils, but if not, then I'll just go for resonant on one band.
Okay, and, you know, I mean, there are resonant half-wave antennas that are capable of multi-band operation. I wrote an article that got broken in half on the E-log of how NFEDs work, and by, you know, just as a straight half-wave NFED, because of the edge effect, it's not quite resonant on ham bands, it's just off the band, but by introducing either a small capacitor or a small loading coil in a particular place, you can kind of set the harmonics back into the ham band. So you might be able to get more than one band on an NFED. You're not going to, obviously, on a half wave NFED, you're not going to really get anything longer wavelength wise than the half wave, but you can get the harmonics that are shorter than that.
WB2QGZ.
Yes, QGZ.
Hi, you fellas. So, you know, one of my antennas here, I have an OCF dipole for sort of the main station. And the station I have down in the shop is on a 40-meter NFED with a 49-to-1. Now, HF Kits, I believe it's HF Kits, sells a half-wave Balun kit with some wire and basically everything you need to put it up. It's the same kit that's sold by the ARRL, so you can get them from either place. If you buy it from HF Kits, they have an 80-meter loaded version as well. But I have that thing cut for 40. It's bent up. It changes in altitude. It changes in azimuth as, you know, down the length of the wire. I can tune it on 40. It works great. And I have not yet gone anywhere else where I haven't been able to tune it. Not using the internal tuner in the radio, but using an external tuner. What I have downstairs, I think, is an LDG AT100, maybe. But one of the external tuners, it'll do, 5-to-1, 10-to-1, something like that. But I've had a lot of good luck with that NFED on multi-bands. You know, it's all, I'm spraying it out there and hoping it goes where I want when I'm not using it on the resonant band, but I haven't been disappointed with its performance, so I'll put it that way. Back to net.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Bill. That's a 49-to-1 Balun, if memory serves me. Very popular. I see it regularly in issues of QSC. ARRL sells it as well. And half waves are decent compromise antennas. So you might just get other bands. You know, you cross your fingers and hope for the best and have a good antenna tuner. You know, I make a joke that my pal Star could tune a doorknob. And we go back to the same discussion that I was having with Rich. That just because you tune it, does that mean that you're getting all the RF that you need to out of your antenna? And unfortunately, antenna tuners are not 100% efficient like most things in the real world. So there is a degree of loss. There is a degree of common mode involved in NFEDs. Some companies that sell a lot of NFEDs also try to sell T-shirts that say, I caused more more RF in my neighborhood than anyone else. And so, consider that when you're using your little RF chokes. Choke the common mode at least before it gets into your chat. Before then, it might be useful as a kind of built-in counterpoise, but you don't need a counterpoise inside your shack. Your radio will love you for it.
Q2-7.
Yes, Bill.
Hi, Roy. That's a very valid point. So what I have is about maybe somewhere between 25 and 30 feet down the coaxial line, I have a one-to-one, which kind of isolates the inside from the outside. And, otherwise, it could be problematic. The other thing I'll tell you is, it's one of those, and any of the super weak DX stations that everybody's fighting for, I've been able to talk on 10, on 20 without too much of a problem, on 17 with that NFED, and it's the performance has been okay. I have tried the 9-to-1 with a random length, or one of the magical lengths. And I can tell you, in my particular case, in the same space, give or take, that the half wave's in, random / magic length with the 9-to-1 performed nowhere near as well as the half wave, for what that's worth. Back to net, WB2QGZ.
Okay, that's interesting to know. I tried to model the non-random NFED. I wasn't able to really get a good model to demonstrate the principles. I have to check Elog's write-up. The illustration doesn't look quite like I remember sending it, so I got to kind of double-check to see whether some of the illustrations got scrambled along the way. But in the original article, which if anyone wants a copy of, you can just email me. I do a whole creation with antenna simulators and demonstrate, taking it from a center fed to an end fed, from an end fed to a end fed with a 49-to-1, and with a end fed with a 49-to-1. With that little extra, I think I put in a loading coil that just kind of nudged the harmonics closer into the ham band. So it's a good illustration of the underlying concept for a half-wave NFET. Again, I tried to do that with the random wire, and I could not, so I don't know quite what to make of it, whether it was me or the nature of these magic. I'm always suspicious of magic lengths because, I always get this idea it's akin to the guys at the racetrack trying to sell you on a horse. So thank you, Bill. I appreciate the information.
W2BZ, the reason I'm not following protocol, because on Echolink it's hard to just call in and then have you acknowledge Roy and then, do it all over again. So, but that's what I was going to suggest, thinking about a 9-to-1 with a random wire, which, that's a very bad name for an antenna because there's nothing random about a random wire. And there are magical lengths all the way up to 133 feet. When I say magical, suggested lengths for the random wire. And they're supposed to be multi-band, much more than an NFED half-wave. But so far, my shortened NFED half-wave works great. Now, it's not a DX antenna, I have to say that. I mean, I did speak to somebody in Portugal, but that's been about it. It's mostly down south, Texas, Midwest type of thing. But I have very little geography here to work with. So it's 33 feet long with a coil almost at the end of it. And if, like I said, if I can hear a station, I can work the station. I could work all day long on 20 meters, somewhat less on 40. And 10, I'm having a problem with my rig with RF. So, but it is a great concept. It's a great antenna, an N-fed half wave, and if you don't need to shorten it, that's even better. Back to net.
Okay, thank you very much, Rich. As I mentioned in the past, the major difference between a proper half-wave N-fed and a non-half-wave N-fed or a random or a non-resonant, there's a whole bunch of different ways of explaining it. It has to be less than a half-wave, because at a half-wave,